Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! Oh, and the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And I want to begin Monday's show with a somber note. Gene Coomer, a longtime member of the WXVW sports team, specifically when it came to Jeffersonville Red Devils basketball, passed away last week at the age of 92. He actually passed away on July 4th, 2019. Gene was well known in the Jeffersonville community and beyond. He was a family man. He was a sportsman. He was a businessman, and he was a retired educator. He attended Jeffersonville High School basketball games as a fan, supporter, mentor, and a broadcaster for many years. In fact, from the 1930s until 2019, last season, and missed only a handful of home games during those years. He had great stories of Jeff basketball, the rise of the Red Devils, some bad years for the Red Devils, stories of different coaches, and stories of some of the great players through the years that made their way through the Jeffersonville program. Gene was well known for his friendship with Teddy Throckmorton, another key WXVW broadcaster over the years who passed away a few years ago as well. And those two together could tell you about everything you wanted to know going on in the city of Jeffersonville, whether it be with sports or politics or what was going on downtown or just about anything that you'd like to know. Gene was probably best known in the community, though, by his former students and those that he had met along the way in his education career. 40 years of service in Greater Clark Schools. He was a teacher, a coach, and a principal. He taught at Jonathan Jennings, Rose Hill, Maple, and East Lawn for a total of 19 years. He was an assistant principal at Spring Hill and administrator for 3 years, and he was the principal of the old McCullough Elementary for 18 years. He continued to substitute once he retired as a principal, teacher, and mentor for 20 years. Gene Coomer has touched the lives of many in Jeffersonville and beyond. I will always be thankful for our time together. I said this during one of our Little League broadcasts last week. I didn't get the chance to listen or to work with Gene as much as I would like, but listening to Gene, he was the stat keeper for many years for the WXVW crews with other legends like Teddy and Charlie Jenkins. To get to know him, to get to meet him, to get to work with him, our lunches at the Elks in Jeffersonville will always be memories that I will keep close. Gene Coomer, a great man, a WXVW legend, a Jeffersonville high school and sports legend, and always a friend and mentor, again, passed away last week at the age of 92. My thoughts and prayers go out to the family of Gene, and specifically his son Tim, who I've had the chance to get to know in recent years as well. But again, everybody here at the radio station at the Big X sends our thoughts and prayers to an old friend and an old Red Devil, Gene Coomer. Welcome into this Monday show. So glad to have you with us today as we begin another week of the program. And again, let me start with this. A lot to get to today. It's a Monday. I know it's the middle of the summer, but plenty to talk about. Summer League basketball underway out in Las Vegas. Still no Romeo Langford so far. But one of the biggest things that we've got tonight is the Little League Baseball District 5 Championship Games. We'll be live at the ballpark tonight. 5:30 is the first pitch in our first of two championship games that we'll be able to squeeze in tonight. We'll start with the 10-year-old division. It used to be called the minor league division, and it will begin at 5:30. That's Jeff GRC, who probably is the favorite on paper. They will take on Silver Creek again, a 5:30 first pitch. Lee Kelly, Tom Wynn, and I will be on shortly before 5:30 with pregame coverage, so join us for that. And then as soon as that game ends, or depending on how good of a game that is in the later innings, we'll transition to the 12-year-old. That's the major division, the main division of Little League Baseball championship game, which should be an absolute fantastic game. New Albany, who has won the district for a number of years at the 12-year-old spot. This 12-year-old team won it a year ago as 11s, went on to win the state championship. They won it 2 years ago as 10s, went on to win the state championship that year. But Silver Creek, their opponent tonight, is ready to go. They're a very good team. They've got a great pitcher who will take the mound tonight, and it should be a lot of fun. So if you want to make it out to the park, you'll be shocked. There'll be a lot of people there taking in these championship games, and there'll be a lot of people there with no connection to any current player, at least, on the field, just fans from the community, former Little Leaguers, and people that want to get out and see their local kids play, which makes our, as I've said, makes our situation special here in Southern Indiana. But two games tonight. We'll have a lot of coverage from the park. Lee Kelly, the plan is to have him on the wireless mic, so there's other championship games going on tonight as well. We'll try to get some updates and highlights from there as well. So we hope that you can join us for our Little League Baseball coverage, our final night from the District 5 tournament tonight, beginning a little before 5:30 here on the Big X Sports Radio. Let's take a look at the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we'll have a brief Hoosier headline segment. Really not a ton to get to today on this first segment of the program. Later in the show, we'll talk with, starting off with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, who is always with us on Mondays. We'll get the latest in IU basketball with Zach when he is with us. And we'll also talk a little bit of recruiting picture as well, and maybe a couple IU football items also. Then later in the program, in place of Chad Gilbert today, Tom Westerholm. He's the Boston Celtics beat writer for the MassLive.com website, does a tremendous job covering the Celtics. He's one of the guys that's had a lot of stuff on Romeo, as you could expect, since he's been in Boston so far, really from the moment that he got drafted by the Celtics. He's going to join us later in the program, and he's going to join us from Las Vegas. He's out there covering the Summer League. Boston obviously got action underway on Saturday afternoon in the Summer League. No Romeo Langford so far, and I really don't know that we should expect to see Romeo Langford at all in the Summer League, but we'll talk with Tom about that. We'll also just talk about the general fit of Romeo and the Celtics and what he's learned from Romeo so far. He's had an opportunity, I think at least a couple times, to be in front of him, to ask him questions, to interview him. And again, he's had a lot of content on Romeo so far, even though there really hasn't been a lot to report on the court outside of some learning, outside of some shooting, outside of the ping pong racket taped to his offhand. But we'll go through all of that. I know everybody wants to know what's going on with Romeo in Boston, and Tom Westerholm of Mass Live, I think, is going to be a great friend of this program here over this NBA rookie season of Romeo Langford to keep us updated on all things with Romeo. So we'll have him later in the program. That's the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget, you can mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, and you'll get $1 off your box lunch. Again, Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Okay, let's take a look at some Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Summer League outside of Romeo Langford, obviously something that all IU people are watching, is Juwan Morgan. He has so far appeared in two games for the Utah Jazz, combined between the Salt Lake City League, which was a short league that's now ended, and the Las Vegas League that began on Saturday and will continue now for a week or so. Two appearances, not a lot of scoring. He's averaged 0.5 points over two games. I think he had 1 point in one game, 0 points in the first game that he played. He said averages in those two games of 16 minutes a game, 1.5 assists, 3 rebounds, 1 block, and a plus-minus score of negative 5.5. So I don't know how you really stack that up. He's not getting a lot of time. That's a little concerning. I do think some of the teams, including the Jazz, have rotations. So if you're not in that key rotation, you may only play every other game or so, even be considered to play every other game or so. So it's not went the way I think that we all hoped it might go for Juwan Morgan, but nonetheless, he is on the roster. He is out in Las Vegas, and he is getting, in a small way, some opportunities to see if he can find a place in the Utah Jazz organization and become potentially a full-time member of that team coming up here when the NBA season gets here a little bit later. Also, I mentioned tonight the Little League Baseball, the District 5 semifinals, championship game will take place tonight. Actually, the softball semifinals are tonight. Some of the championship games in softball are Tuesday. But nonetheless, it'll be a big night. 5:30, Jeff GRC will take on Silver Creek, and then that's the 10-year-old championship, and then the 12-year-old major division at 7 o'clock, New Albany and Silver Creek in that game as well. So Silver Creek with two teams in the championship games tonight. If the winner of that 10-year-old game, state tournament, they stay local. They go to New Albany later in July for a three-day state tournament to crown the best Little League 10-year-old team in Indiana. For the 12-year-old division, they get turned around a little quicker. Middle of July coming up sometime in the next week and a half or so, they go to Greenwood Little League on the south side of Indianapolis for that state tournament. Of course, if you win that, you go on to the Great Lakes Regional, which is played in Indianapolis. And if you win that, you go to Williamsport, Pennsylvania. So a lot of baseball potentially ahead for whoever comes out of that championship game tonight in the 12-year-old division. I'll tell you what, there'll be a lot of people across the state, these other district winners, looking to see who wins that one tonight. New Albany has been the dominant Little League, I think maybe the most dominant ever in the state of Indiana, but a lot of people know Silver Creek is a big challenge this year. So it should be a great final. Looks like the weather's going to be good. We'll have the broadcast, as I said, at the top of the program, but if you don't have anything else going on, you may make your way to Jeff GRC Little League tonight, right behind Parkview Middle School for free. It's all free to get in. Little League Baseball tonight. I promise you, you'll enjoy it. You may think, gosh, Little League Baseball, I haven't seen that since my son played. Get out, you'll enjoy it. You'll get behind your community. You'll be amazed at what you'll see there tonight. So, again, check it out. We'll be on the air a little bit before 5:30 this evening. Also, high school football. I know it seems like forever away, but we are getting closer and closer with each week that passes to being 1 month out from high school football in the area. A lot of new coaches this year in the area. That's a kind of a story, I think, by itself this year as we head into the 2019 high school football season here in Southern Indiana. But August 23rd is the first Friday Night Lights, and of course we'll have full coverage here on the Big X with some announcements coming up soon about our preseason coverage and how we're going to do our coverage in this 2019 season. But let's look at the schedule for that night on this slow news day. Evansville-Harrison at New Albany. That's an opening night game for the Bulldogs. Floyd Central, another local team, they always take on Louisville Male. That's a huge challenge for the Highlanders in the first game of the season. They are at Louisville Male this season. Fern Creek is at Jeffersonville. Of course, the Red Devils with new head coach Isaac Parker. Providence plays at Bardstown Bethlehem in their opener this season. Charlestown at Silver Creek, what a rivalry to open things up between those two programs. David Pappenhaus, the new coach at Silver Creek. Of course, Jason Hawkins, the longtime coach at Charlestown, went to Silver Creek for a couple years, back at Charlestown as the head coach. So that's a heck of a rivalry, a big, big game in week one to open things up. Also, Clarksville at Scottsburg in week one, and Rock Creek with also a new local head coach there at Oldenburg Academy. The first day of non-contact practice, now that summer stuff is wrapping up, is August 5th. The first day of contact practice is August 8th, and the high school football season will be here before you know it. It is just around the corner, and hard to believe that in a couple Fridays from now, from this week, we'll be talking about being 1 month away from the start of the high school season. That's a look at the headlines for this Monday edition of the program. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We'll talk a lot of IU and related stuff coming up your way next right here on the Big X Sports Radio. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with, Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Monday program, joined by Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, the IU insider for the Star, with us Mondays on the program. Zach, I talk zero soccer. I don't know that I've ever mentioned soccer outside of some local high school teams that have had success in the state tournament, but I know you are a big soccer guy, and yesterday, from what I understand from the little bit I follow it, was a huge, huge soccer day for the men and the women, although I don't know that all the results came out on the side of the USA. Still a big day for soccer nuts like Zach Osterman.
yes, you can say that, I think. Obviously, the Women's World Cup final was yesterday, and I think that's probably the showpiece anytime you talk about a World Cup. And without wanting to be flippant, obviously, when you talk about United States soccer, the landscape has been really kind of, I don't say dominated by the women, but the women have been the kind of standard bearer for a long time for this country and the sport, just because of the success that they've had. They've now won 4 World Cups, which I believe is the most. I think Germany have also won 4 World Cups. They're only the second team ever to win back-to-back World Cups. Again, Germany being the first. And it just, you know, this was, they won it in 2015 with a fairly dominant performance, frankly, certainly when they got to the later rounds. That tournament was held in Canada. This one was held in Europe, where the game has grown a lot, in the women's game, in the last, I'd say, probably 8 to 10 years. And I think it says something about this women's team's performance in particular, that it went through a European team at every stage of the knockout round. That they played Spain, then they played hosts France, then they played England, and then they played the Netherlands in the final. And, you know, to knock out 4 European teams on European soil, to be as dominant as they were in the final, the Netherlands only had 1 shot on target the entire game. The U.S. actually, they only won 2-0, but they had twice as many shots on goal as the Netherlands had shots total. It was a dominant performance. The men's side, they played in the Gold Cup. They were actually defending champions in the Gold Cup, to their credit. Hasn't been maybe the most inspiring tournament overall for the U.S., but the reality is, you know, they were in the final, and I think that what you're seeing is still on the men's side, you know, a kind of a transitional talent cycle. They hired a full-time head coach finally in Greg Berhalter before this tournament. And some really promising young players like Weston McKinney and Zach Steffen and obviously Christian Pulisic. But last night, I think, was a reminder that it's a group that still has a ways to go. Lost 1-0 to Mexico and at Soldier Field in Chicago. And I think certainly after the disappointment of not making the World Cup in 2018, the Gold Cup, which is effectively sort of the, without wanting to get too into the weeds with it, each of the continents have their own sort of organizing association for international football, soccer, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. In Europe, it's called UEFA. In North and Central America, it's called CONCACAF. Everybody plays their own version. It's almost like a scaled-down World Cup just for teams in that region. That's what the Gold Cup is. So you're playing Costa Rica, Mexico, Panama, Jamaica, et cetera, et cetera. And I think this tournament was at least maybe evidence that the U.S. should be able to measure back up in CONCACAF, should be able to, as it progresses over the next couple of years, qualify for the 2022 World Cup and get kind of back on that horse. But, you know, you're still a little bit disappointed when you lose, and especially when you lose to Mexico, which is traditionally the U.S.'s big rival.
One other thing, and then we'll get into some IU basketball, maybe even a little football today. I was curious. A lot of people yesterday had their phones, their iPads out following the women's game and then, of course, the men's game later that night. And I thought, I wonder if there was planning to make this such a big soccer day specifically for the American teams. But from what I saw, I think it may have even been something that you tweeted or retweeted it was kind of a mistake that these games were put on the same day so close to each other, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually somewhat controversial. I mean, basically, because there was a third final yesterday, which is the Copa America, which is the same idea as the Gold Cup, but for South America, South American teams. It was played between Brazil and Peru. And the argument's essentially that, in as with many things in sports, in football, women's football is very often in the back seat. You know, women's club football is not nearly as popular as men's club football. It's not as well funded. Players aren't as well paid. You know, you have things like the European Championships and the Gold Cup and that sort of thing, but it doesn't resonate. It doesn't get the same coverage. It doesn't get the same, you know, sort of television billing. But the Women's World Cup is big ticket stuff once every 4 years. And the argument's essentially, in a summer full of dates, when you could have held these finals, why couldn't the women just have one day to themselves to be able to completely showcase their game, their sport, their stars? You know, you could have pushed that game to later in the day. You could have held it at maybe 8 o'clock local time in France, make it prime time in Europe, make it a little bit more accessible in the States. I mean, 11 a.m. is not a terrible kickoff time, but I do think you'd get a little bit more buzz for it if it was at, let's say, 2 or 3 on a Sunday. And it's also worth pointing out the Women's World Cup. The women, it's my understanding anyway, picked their date first. So it's not like they all chose to kind of land in this one place. The other tournaments could have organized around this and effectively chose not to. You know, I think there were suggestions it was a mistake, and you can say that, and that's fine, and we'll probably never know. But, you know, the point I just made was, in England, as an example, the FA Cup final, all of the playoff finals, through the course of the month of May and even into early June, are all held at the same stadium, Wembley Stadium in London. And yet none of them ever fall on the same day, and none of them ever conflict with the Champions League final. They find a way to do it. You can find a way to do it. You just kind of chose not to. And without wanting to get, you know, disappeared down the rabbit hole of whether or not, you know, the women are adequately compensated compared to the men, and certainly compared to their success level and all those different sorts of things, I think it's just fair to say that, like, it wouldn't have been hard to give the women's game one day to just all to itself, to be able to say, look at what we can do, look at the spectacle we can make, and look at the success that we're having. And that's, you know, for you or me, the fan, hey, it was fun. You know, I mean, I literally, my wife sort of rolled her eyes and said, day of soccer continues, when I was staying up to watch the Gold Cup. It kicked off at 9. But at the same time, it you could have staggered them in different ways. You could have found other ways to do it, to just allow women's soccer one day over the itself. And I think that was a fair complaint, and I hope it's something that, you know, different organizing committees and organizations take into account going forward.
Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star with us on this Monday program. Zach, if I was ever going to talk soccer, you're the guy I would want to talk with. So, we'll make you the resident soccer expert here on the show when the next World Cup rolls around, or we have a local storyline for soccer. But thanks for that. Very interesting. I do want to get to some IU stuff, and I know we talk a lot about Romeo, and it's like every day has he been in full contact, and we have a Boston Celtics beat writer coming on when we get done talking with you today to talk in depth about Romeo and about the Celtics. But, you know, Juwan Morgan is in summer league too, and he's not been getting a lot of minutes. I know the Jazz tend to play players in waves. I think he's had 2 games so far, 1 in Salt Lake and 1 in Vegas, I believe, where he's logged some minutes. He's had some rebounds, but that's been about the extent of it. A lot of people say, oh, man, he's not playing a lot. That's not good for his NBA career. What do you make of Juwan getting really very little action for the Jazz summer league team?
Well, I think on the one hand, I mean, listen, Juwan Morgan is exactly the kind of player who needs some of those opportunities, you know, just in terms of he needs to be able to get out on the floor a little bit. He needs to be able to, you know, try to not just necessarily showcase, but I think also start to get a feel, you know, for what's going to be different about what he's going to be asked to do effectively in the NBA. And we've talked about it. I think people can surmise certain things about it. He needs to be able to knock down the three a little bit more often. He needs to be a little bit more, needs to be able to play a little bit smaller, particularly on the defensive end, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't want more minutes. He absolutely should. 16 minutes a game, I think, is where he's at right now, or somewhere right around there. You know, certainly you want to see him maybe get a little bit more opportunity than that. And I'll also be a little bit curious. I don't know what the situation with his contract with the Jazz is, but if he's not able to get in with another summer league team at some point. You see players do that every once in a while where they kind of basically play for a couple different teams in the summer league. The other thing I would say, though, about Juwan Morgan is really it's going to be a process. You know, if he does turn into that player, it's not going to happen overnight. And I think Indiana tried to turn him into that player, or at least give him opportunities to be that player more often, certainly in the senior season, but then the roster kind of collapsed under the weight of injuries, and Indiana just had to ask him to go play center because it really didn't have any other options. You know, it couldn't play anybody else down there for extended periods of time. It's going to take Juwan Morgan a while to adapt his game, and that's okay. And I think that if he can use this summer to solidify some sort of maybe a training camp invite, maybe a really, really good G League opportunity, I think that's good. And I don't think that it's necessarily something where if, you know, he doesn't get another 8-10 minutes of run per game here in the summer league, that's going to deep six everything he's been working toward. Because I think if you want to chart a realistic path for Juwan Morgan to a sort of solid NBA career, I think it takes a year or two of really kind of working on his game at the pro level, particularly maybe in like I said, a G League setting, maybe a two-way contract, something like that, that allows him to kind of really adapt to what teams are going to expect from him. And that's just not something that's going to happen all overnight, and it's okay that it's not.
Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star is my guest. One other thing I wanted to bring up related to IU basketball is I saw, I guess it's a photo gallery that was put up earlier today. Who is IU basketball recruiting in the 2020 class was the headline. And obviously we're kind of in the middle of the evaluation period. The high school stuff that was in June is over. There's an AAU, a traditional type weekend coming up in July, as well as some NCAA academy camps, I think is what they're officially termed, that are new this year, and there's still a lot of question marks out about exactly how they're going to come off for recruiting prospects and how good of an evaluation tool they'll be for Division I coaches. But with that said, it's kind of a theme on this program is we've got so many names that we talk about, and IU offered this guy and this guy and this guy's from in-state and this guy's from out-of-state, and here's what they do well, and here's some background on them, and here's how they played at the Charlie Hughes event a couple weekends ago. But now we're to the point where, especially for the 2020 class, these guys are going to be seniors. Most schools nowadays start back in late July, if not early August, somewhere between those dates. These guys are going to be entering their final year of high school very soon. So it's go time. Once the July period is over with every year, you see a lot of commitments. You see guys start to the big time guys really start to trim their list and work down toward a commitment. You see a lot of players that are seniors that want to get the decision done before the start of the high school season or their first high school game so they can focus on doing their best and trying to win a state championship and go out on a high note their senior year. So I bring all that up because you're putting a photo gallery and writing about, you know, who the big prospects are in 2020. I've kind of changed my questions to people like you and Alex and others that joined the program. Instead of let's talk about this recruit or that potential target for IU, out of those guys now, who do you see as the big targets that Indiana has a lot of interest in, that they, in return, whoever the player is, has a lot of interest in Indiana? And then, hey, when this thing comes to a close at the end of July and they start trimming their list, and who do you see out of these guys we talk about and that you write about really could end up as a Hoosier, your top couple on the 2020 list?
Yeah, I mean, I think you used the right term there. It's go time. That's always what it feels like coming out of July. I think it's funny, like people always, and I know that July's a little bit different now, and we'll see if it sort of moves and shakes a little bit differently kind of coming out the other side, because it's not this sort of like month-long sprint where every weekend you're out playing or every weekend coaches are out recruiting, whatever. You know, as you said, that it's almost kind of pocketed a little bit differently. But people always obsess about July and where coaches are in July and stuff like that. And I always kind of want to say, like, August is what matters. Like when you come out the other side of July, who is talking about taking official visits to your school? Who, as you said, is trimming their lists to 4, 5, 6, and your school's making the cut? Is there somebody new? The example I often use is Robert Johnson, who I think Indiana had been monitoring for a while, but wasn't ready to go all in on until they saw him in that last July before his senior year. And that was when they pulled the trigger on the offer. That was when they just sort of went all in. And what do you wind up getting? A kid who scores like something like 1,300 career points at Indiana, is one of the better 3-point shooters Indiana's seen in the last, you know, 10 years, or at least more consistent for your starter, et cetera. You know, this is when you position yourself with the kids that you want and that you know want you. And it's the sprint, to my mind, really starts basically coming out of this month. I think a couple names that would be fairly obvious for IU fans. I mean, I did my list just like essentially alphabetically. I try not to rank things. I think you can get, you know, tricky there. But I would keep Matt Cross very much in mind. You know, I think IU in Miami, I think even Butler kind of involved there. Cross actually already took an official visit. You want to talk about soccer? I was downtown meeting a couple friends to watch the Champions League final, which I'd happily remind everyone that Liverpool won, by the way. and I don't worry, I'll be bringing that up again several times for the rest of the next calendar year. But Matt Cross and I think his family and IU staff went cruising down Kirkwood in the IU basketball golf cart that you often see visitors on with Archie Miller or one of these. So, I mean, he's a guy who's already taken visits, and I believe that was a – I would assume anyway that that was a junior year visit. So he would, you know, in theory, be able to take another one because there's a lot more sort of leniency and windows for visits for guys now. I think that's maybe one of the ways that, whether they say it or not, the NCAA tries to compensate for some of these changes in recruiting, is to let the players – be more involved going to the programs rather than rather than just kind of all of this sort of aggressive AAU, whatever. And that's you and I both know that's a whole separate discussion, but, And then Anthony Leal, Trey Galloway. I mean, those are guys that are obviously going to be mentioned. They're solid 4-star guys. They're some of the best players in the class in the state. I think you're talking about two players that could both be competing for state titles this season, could both be competing for Mr. Basketball this season. And I think in different ways would fit Indiana really well. I think Anthony Leal, you know, is a guy who's got good size for kind of that two-guard position, potentially a very good shooter in college, could become, you know, I think this term probably gets a little bit overused these days, but sort of that idea of 3-and-D, a guy that can defend well and then can knock down threes for you, can create a little bit off the dribble for you. And then Trey Galloway is a guy that I actually hadn't really seen much of until Indiana All-Stars, but I really, really think he's got big potential. He won a state title as a sophomore at Culver, lost the state championship game with Culver last season. He also played through, I think, a wrist injury for a lot of last season. But there's just a lot of different tools there, and he's one of those guys where you feel like he hasn't put it together completely in any area of his game yet, in terms of how to use his athleticism, in terms of polishing his shot and his dribble, whatever. But there's so, but that's, you also feel a little bit like you're watching a guy who fits that old adage of, you know, you send two runners sprinting down to first base. One has great form, one has average form. They get there at the same time. Imagine what you could do with a guy who has average form. I think Trey Galloway's got a lot of really, really good tools, and yet I also think that there's a ceiling that none of those tools individually have touched yet, that if you could get him into a college weight program, a college developmental system, all those different things, I think you could have a guy that would take off really quickly and become a very, very good player. And I don't think it's a mistake that he's got not just an IU offer, but Purdue hollering its trail, Michigan State very involved. You're starting to see his recruitment go a little bit more national. Georgetown offered recently. Those are guys that I think Indiana's really going to make a priority of, not just in July, but in terms of getting into the fall.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how the twists and turns work out for IU basketball. Of course, an assistant coaching vacancy, and I want to get to IU football with you as well, but we'll have to do both of those next week. It's time for a commercial break. Zach, thank you as always. Glad we got to talk some soccer in addition to our regular routine of IU basketball-related stuff. And we'll do it again next week, and I promise to work a little football in for the first time in a while.
Thanks for having me. Sorry, once you get me started talking on soccer, I just can't stop. I apologize.
I'm sure we made some soccer fans happy. I get beat up on a little bit from other sports outside of basketball because it's such a basketball heavy program. But that's what drives the needle and something that interests me greatly and obviously interests our area greatly. But it's nice to diverge off into some other things sometimes. So thanks for that.
Absolutely. Like I said, anytime you want to talk soccer, I'm your huckleberry.
We got it. Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, always kind enough to join us on Mondays. A great start to the week. Very educated in his beat, all things IU athletics. We'll head to a break. We'll come back with Tom Westerholm. He's the Boston Celtics beat writer for Mass Live. He's in Vegas as well at the Summer League. We're going to talk Romeo Langford and some Celtics stuff coming up next right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment on this Monday program. Last week we had Kyle Draper, who hosts the pre- and post-game Boston Celtics shows before and after their games. Of course, Kyle with a local connection back to Kentuckiana. Today, to talk Romeo Langford and the Celtics, I'm excited to have on another guy that I think will be a tremendous asset, not only to join us on this program from time to time to talk Romeo and the Celtics, but also for you guys to follow and get to know his work and coverage of Romeo and the Celtics. His name is Tom Westerholm. He's the Boston Celtics beat writer for Mass Live. You can read his work at masslive.com/Celtics, and you can follow Tom on Twitter at Tom_NBA. In fact, you probably have seen his work because last week he had a really, really good piece on Romeo Langford that profiled some of his background and off-the-court stuff and the kid and the young adult, I guess we should say now, that we here in Southern Indiana and really throughout the Hoosier State know that Romeo is, taking time to visit the funeral of a young boy who lost his mother, etc. A lot of things that he's done like that over the years. Tom is actually in Las Vegas as well for the Summer League, so Tom, we're extra appreciative of you taking time to join us while you're out on the beat covering the Celtics in the summer. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on.
I think you told me this in between commercial breaks. You've become a lot more popular here in Southern Indiana. You've picked up some Twitter followers. I know you surely have had some interaction with local fans and supporters of Romeo. I saw a lot of tweets going out to you and things like that. It's interesting when a guy gets drafted by a franchise. You know, there's always someone from the hometown that is interested and proud of him and wants to follow that specific player. But I've got to believe that you'll tell me you've had an extra oomph in things with Romeo Langford and the following that he has.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, I mean, it's been kind of cool to see. Obviously, you could kind of see that coming just when I was reporting the story and just learning about all the things that he did around the community and, you know, just kind of not only the player that he was, but also how popular he was and just kind of the guy he was. You kind of expect somebody like that to be a pretty popular guy around his hometown. So it's definitely been cool to see sort of the reaction to everything that's been going on with him so far.
Tom, talk a little bit about your piece. I have a feeling that most people have seen it. I know it was shared widely. But talk a little bit about your piece, what's in it, and also what your conversation was like with Romeo Langford and some of the people you talked to put that together.
Yeah, so the story was basically I started off just kind of digging around, talked to Jim Shannon, his high school coach, and just to try to get a sense of who Romeo was and what he was like as a younger, you know, as a younger player, as a high school kid. And, you know, just kind of started, the more I kind of dug, the more I just found, you know, people who really, really liked Romeo and, you know, really appreciated what he did in the community. And, you know, so basically it just kind of became like, you know, let me compile some stories here. Let me put together some stories of, you know, that sort of paint the picture of what he meant to Southern Indiana and to New Albany. And it, frankly, it wasn't very hard. I mean, people liked talking about him. It was certainly fun to put together. You know, talked to Romeo a little bit about it. And I mean, he, you know, was very, you can just kind of tell that he's very proud to sort of be from a place where he feels like he always feels like he can go home. He always feels like there's a, you know, there's a town, there's a city, there's sort of a region of the country that has his back. And obviously he's in a new place now, which is, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit of an experience for him, just because obviously he, you know, stayed in Southern Indiana. He went to Indiana University, and now he's you know, in a, you know, on the coast, and he's in a big media market. I think it'll be a new experience for him, but I think he definitely feels like, you know, there's a huge sense of support for him back home.
Absolutely. You can read this story that Tom wrote at masslive.com/Celtics. I also retweeted it if you haven't seen it just yet. This is probably a question that you have gotten from a lot of people on social media and with Romeo's popularity. But the summer league started. You're in Vegas now. Celtics got things underway with a victory on Saturday evening out in Vegas. No Romeo Langford. We know he has not been cleared for any kind of full contact. We've seen a lot of pictures of him taking in terminology and video, sitting off to the side of the court. We've even seen him doing some shooting work with a ping pong paddle attached to his offhand. So I think you have to assume, and you may know a lot more than what we do, but you have to assume with summer league now underway, it's a pretty quick turnaround from the start to the finish of it. With him not being cleared for contact at this point, that it's likely we will not see him suit up for the summer Celtics out in Las Vegas.
I think that's a fair assessment. I mean, it seems like from talking to people that he, I mean, obviously they value him quite a bit. You know, they picked him 14th. They're very high on him. And, you know, summer league is a good experience. It's a good chance for guys to learn terminology, for them to learn, you know, defensive, offensive schemes, but it's also just summer league. So I don't think they're certainly not going to rush him back if there's any risk whatsoever of, you know, re-injury or of making it worse, or if there's a sense that, you know, it might hinder his development. You know, one of the things they're working on with him on his shot is just trying to keep his, like you said, with the ping pong paddle, they're trying to keep his left thumb off the ball a little bit. And I think, you know, I talked to one of the assistant coaches was telling me that he actually kind of likes the fact that Romeo is, you know, kind of rehabbing right now, because he's able to sort of take a step back, you know, rework the jumper a little bit, just kind of, you know, get that back to full strength and then maybe a little bit better before the season starts. So I would not expect to see him in Las Vegas, and then I would definitely expect to see him, obviously, once the preseason gets going, because it sounds like he's getting close, but he probably won't quite be there by the end of the week.
Tom Westerholm, he's the Boston Celtics beat writer for Mass Live. You can follow him at Tom_NBA on Twitter for all of his great coverage of not just Romeo, but obviously the Celtics franchise as a whole. Is Romeo in Las Vegas, or is he stay back in Boston, or do you know?
Yeah, no, he's out here. He's been shooting. He's been, you know, at all the practices and everything. And you know, just I don't think that he's been doing much in terms. I know they've been clearing him a little bit more and a little bit more. I don't think that he's been doing a lot in terms of, you know, in terms of like running and that kind of thing, because obviously they still have to be careful of, you know, how he catches passes and, you know, how he shoots and everything. But he's out here, he's working, and they're definitely trying to, like they're doing with all the rookies, they're trying to hammer home just, you know, how the Celtics defend and how he can make an impact in his rookie year.
Tom, I promised, you talk about all the rookies, I promised somebody I would ask this of somebody that knows more about it than me, and you would definitely qualify as someone that would know a lot. What do they do? And it has to be standard nowadays, given how young some of these players are that get drafted and enter the NBA. You mentioned Romeo from Southern Indiana, chose to stay locally an hour and a half or so away to go to college. So really, outside of his basketball travels, which I know have taken him with some of the Adidas stuff out of the country in different places, but outside of those travels, you know, he's been right here in the middle part of the country for most, if not all, of his life. That said, you know, all of a sudden you get drafted. All of a sudden you've got to find a place to live in Boston. All of a sudden you've got all these new responsibilities. Do NBA teams have help with young players, draftees, for placement, or would that come more on the agent side of things, or is that even something you would know?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, and you know, it kind of depends on the player too. You know, a lot of times if it seems like a certain player is going to need more support, or if he's going to need, you know, somebody here or there, then yeah, like a coach might take a little bit of a bigger role in helping that player out. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times, you know, it comes down to, you know, it could come down to family, it could come down to an agent helping the player out, like you said. It really kind of depends on the specific case. I don't know what the specific case would be with Romeo. I know obviously he's from Southern Indiana, but he also, you know, he was in Egypt. He was in doing like Team USA stuff. He was in Los Angeles for a couple of weeks, I believe, earlier this summer. So he, you know, does have experience kind of being on his own, and I think he will adjust pretty well. He seems like a pretty well-adjusted young man in general. It will be, you know, a pretty major change. Obviously, you go from, you know, from the Indiana University to, you know, making millions of dollars playing professional basketball. Like, that's a big jump. But, you know, I think that somebody like Romeo, he probably won't be someone who sets off a lot of, like, alarm bells, if that makes sense. Like, he won't be somebody that the coaching staff is worried about going into the season.
Absolutely, and I guess that'd be a good problem to have, playing basketball, making millions of dollars and trying to figure some of this stuff out. All right, let me ask you this. You're in Vegas, which is a great place to be. You're there during the NBA Summer League, which has always been something on my bucket list. I've been to Vegas for the high school, the AAU stuff before, which is a blast as well. That's obviously changed a lot this year with the new recruiting stuff. But I've always wanted to make it out for the Summer League. In fact, I may very well have this year had I had some confidence that Romeo may be cleared to play in it. But you're out there, and it sounds like from all accounts, including some things that you've written and tweeted, other people as well, that this year at the Summer League has just a tremendous vibe to it because of players like Zion Williamson and some of the draft class. The games have been packed. There have been lines to get in. On top of that, you had to experience, I think, an earthquake in the first night you got there to cover things. So talk a little bit about the scene this year in Vegas for the Summer League, even though it looks like Romeo Langford will not be part of that this summer.
Yeah, I mean, that first day was wild. It was, you know, obviously Zion has had sort of this he's sort of overwhelmed venues from like the time that he was a junior in high school. So, it was really interesting to see that at the NBA stage, where, you know, you're kind of used to big crowds, and even in a place that's used to big crowds, Zion was still, you know, very noteworthy. So that was really interesting. And then obviously the earthquake was a pretty wild experience as well for somebody who lives on the East Coast and is not used to such things. But you know, it's been interesting recently. The Celtics have had a lot of buzz around them just because they have Taco Fall, who is 7'7", just an enormous human being. And so, yeah, I mean, the buzz has been really fun. The electricity has been really fun. I think it's probably going to go down a little bit over the next week just because Zion was ruled out for the rest of the week after taking knee-to-knee contact in that first game.
Right.
And I mean, that's just, you know, that's a little deflating, I think, for a lot of people who are out here. But yeah, generally, I mean, so far it's been a lot of fun. There's been just a ton of stuff to talk about, and even just NBA wide, it's, you know, all the Kawhi stuff, all the Paul George stuff, that all comes up here as well. So it's definitely been a fascinating year, and definitely one of the more interesting summer leagues so far that I can remember.
Tom Westerholm of Mass Live, our guest, he's the Boston Celtics beat writer for Mass Live. What type of role? And I know without seeing him in the Celtics uniform this summer with some of the other draft class and young players on the roster, it might be a little harder for you to make this guess, I guess. But when you think about the Celtics next season, plus there's been some other changes, obviously some departures and Kemba Walker coming in. But with all that put together, what type of opportunities are there for Romeo Langford in this rookie season? What type of playing time do you think is really there for him in this opening year?
Yeah, I mean, I think he will get minutes, obviously. You know, you don't invest a, you know, lottery pick into a guy that you don't plan on playing. He does face a pretty loaded sort of wing roster. And the Celtics have, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward. These are all guys who I would expect to start. And I think that actually would work out well for Romeo, just because that would then open up a larger sort of wing role off the bench for him. You know, I think there is a chance that they try to go a little bit bigger and they bring either Jalen or Gordon off the bench, you know, and then put up more of a traditional power forward in at the four. If they do that, I think Romeo will be a little bit, you know, a little bit further down the depth chart, which, you know, probably be a few, a little bit less in terms of minutes. But, you know, he's somebody who's in their plans. He's somebody they're definitely high on. You know, I know they were very intrigued by him when they talked to him at the combine. And, you know, I think he's, you know, he's definitely somebody who they want to make sure they develop as well as possible. I think there would probably be a small chance that he ends up playing a game or two in Maine with the G League team, just in turn, just to get minutes. If they, you know, if they do feel like that, you know, maybe he's not getting enough time, if they want to see a little bit more development from him in that sense. But yeah, I would expect him to play some minutes. He won't be a starter, but he will be a contributor. And obviously, if he can, you know, really kind of improve the jumper, get it a little bit better than it was last season with a healthy thumb, that'll make a big difference. That would definitely increase his chances of getting on the floor.
Tom Westerholm of the Mass Live publication, Boston Celtics beat writer. Final question for you. When the summer league stuff wraps up, we all think that Romeo's pretty close to being cleared, but just not ready quite in time for the summer league. What happens for these young players, for this summer league team, when they go back to Boston? How soon, I'm assuming workouts continue. What kind of is the pathway through the remainder of the summer to the NBA preseason?
Yeah, so a lot of guys do end up, you know, especially young guys, do end up going back to Boston and getting workouts in there. Obviously, the Celtics have a great facility there for, you know, for everything from shooting to weightlifting to, I mean, swimming, like everything they could, you know, everything they could need there. And a lot of times it's a good way for that, those kind of couple of months there are a good chance to get used to the city. So I would expect, you know, something like that. And yeah, they training camp starts up in September. So he'll have a couple of months to rest and rehab and, you know, just kind of get prepared, because the NBA season is it's a grind, and it's definitely an adjustment for guys coming out of college. But yeah, I would expect him, you know, next couple of months, guys can pretty much do what, you know, obviously they can do whatever they want over the next little bit, but a lot of times rookies will kind of take that opportunity to familiarize themselves with their surroundings and just kind of get used to their new town.
Tom Westerholm, he's the Boston Celtics beat writer for Mass Live, joining us from the NBA Summer League in Las Vegas. MassLive.com/Celtics for all of his coverage, @Tom_NBA for his updates as well. Tom, thank you. I hope it's okay to bother you from time to time for updates on Romeo and the Celtics, since you'll be courtside for all the games, and I'm very appreciative of your time today on the program.
Of course, man. Bother me anytime.
All right, great. Tom Westerholm, Mass Live, Celtics beat writer. That's going to wrap things up for this Monday edition of the program. Thanks so much for being with us. We've got Little League Baseball tonight, District 5 championship games on the Big X, and we're back Tuesday at 11 a.m. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.